copy. I can only copy 40 sheets a day or something like that. So I just hand wrote some notes. And this is from a letter from Mr. W.T. Lopp, Chief of the Alaska Division, Seattle, to Mr. W.G. Beatty, District Superintendent of Schools, Southeast Alaska, October 12, 1911. This morning I received a letter from Mr. Craig Miller of Fish Egg, telling me that they were themselves building a house for a school at Fish Egg.
And Fish Egg used to be Craig?
Right. And asking for a teacher. A few days ago, a letter from Mr. Hawksworth told me there were quite a number of children at Howcan and a school should be open there. You may recall that I recommended that no school be open there until the new village was underway. At that time, I thought the new village would be started before this. It seems that Mr. Ross is making a great effort to hold the natives at Howcan. I believe now that we should open the Howcan school after what Mr. Hawksworth has written. He suggested sending Miss McConnell there, since she was so much in sympathy with the new village proposition. As far as that goes, it would be well, but I believe that we ought to keep Mrs. McConnell at work along the lines of hygiene and sanitation along the West Coast. A new teacher could be given instructions to aid the new village in words and deeds at Howcan without arousing special antagonisms on the part of Mr. Ross and others. And then this is another letter from Mr. Lopp to Mr. Beatty in November 16, 1911. Governor Clark holds that there must be 20 whites to open a territorial school at Fish Eggs. Now what about that place? Is it up to us, isn't it, if they have the required number of native children? In case we open there, shall we bring the furniture from Howcan there, or will you send up new furniture? By the way, I don't see how we can get to Heidelberg by Thanksgiving Day, but I'll do so if I can make the boat connection. Thanksgiving has always been Heidelberg's birthday, and that would have been the first one. But it was a surprise to me in reading some of the things at the National Archives and Record Center that I imagine that the people that wrote these never thought that the people would ever read these things. It just struck me as how they had more details about the early history than we have within our own archive. You know? And it would be a difficult task to gather a lot of this information together. But I think it's important to see this early history, and one of the failings of our school system for myself. I was late in coming to Heidelberg, and I spent from the time I was in the third grade until I joined the service in boarding schools and foster homes, and was taught about the history that people didn't really understand. Who were the Haidas? They had no idea and could care less. And it's a similar situation even here in Alaska, where we have to hire teachers who have no previous knowledge of the history, the culture, the people, or the situation that we find ourselves in. And it's difficult to encourage kids to participate or adults to participate in this process we call municipal government or government, because it doesn't make sense most of the time. And it's not homegrown. It's developed elsewhere and put in. It's what Mao Zedong used to say, cutting the feet to fit the shoes. And it just doesn't work all the time. So I could probably ramble on, but I think there's other people here.
Well, thank you very much. Do you happen to be, can you tell me who the first quote you made is from?
Yeah, that's Plotinus from the Aeneids. A guy named Stephen McKenna wrote, took 30 years to translate that so that you would get it in English, what he thought of it in Greek. And I was always impressed with that quote because it defines an ugly idea that the people are intimidated by expressions that sound intelligent but don't make any sense. You know, it is intimidating to hear people tell you about your history in words that you can't put your finger on, or to do other things that, to set up a body of law that you cannot understand. You know.
What was the last quote from?
Hegel, Phenomenology of Mind. That was the one about the idea coming to a head.
Well, thanks very much. Is it possible you were reading a lot of that? Is it possible to leave behind what you were reading from so that our transcript here will be...
Yeah.
I know our people here are acquainted with Plotinus and Hegel, but
yeah.
Still the spelling might be helpful.
Oh, yeah.
And if you could leave those behind, the written material you had ready, that would be good.
Well, I don't have them in any organization. Yeah, what I did was I got these quotes together, and then I was going to put the narrative and then move it around.
Well, give me the whatever you've got
okay.
That includes the quotes. And,
sure.
We'll...
Sure, thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, by all means.
This is hearings on what people think of the ANSCA Act, right? Okay, my name is Mary Guthrie. I'm Ganach Adi. My mother is Daruchesh of the Ganach Adi tribe, Klawak. I welcome this time to state my views on the ANSCA Act because I understand that this is statewide, and I'm wondering how this will come out with what I have to say with the other people that possibly are maybe feeling the same thing. What will you do with this? When this is all done, will the towns get a transcript of what's going on? Will we get a rundown or a breakdown or anything like that?
Well, we will be sending to the town a transcript of the testimony taken here today and tonight.
And tomorrow afternoon, because we after that we'll be leaving. But as I explained at the beginning, I'll be writing a report based on what I hear throughout the state and based on what people like you tell me at meetings like this, and I'll send that to everybody who testifies, and that'll be available to all the people, all the Alaska Native people to, and their organizations to decide to make their plans for the future.
Great, so then it will be incorporated like into a nutshell. What happened in the state, what the people said, the basic trends, the major concerns, on and on like that.
Right. It might be a big nutshell, but that's about it.
We've had nutshells and nuts to go with them. Okay. Okay. My first comment on the ANSCA Act would be that it was to me and to our old people, because my dad was elderly of this community, and he told me over and over again, and I've heard it from other old people too, that the ANSCA Act is already a success. It was a success because the initial action was for the federal government to prove to our people that we were indigenous, and the way they did that was to put it in writing, not to just say it like they always try to do, get away with some snide little slippery acts there, but they put it in writing. And so our people, our old people, although these corporations are far from what they had in mind, believe that they won, and I believe that they won too. So that's how I feel about that. The way I feel about this ANSCA Act, when the corporations were incorporated, I believe that it did harm to the people in that it set us at variance. The corporations are vying against each other, and they're all Indian people, Tlingits against Tlingits, in forms of corporations. And not only that, while we have these corporations, we have board members. And within these local communities, these board members are more or less alienated from their constituents, which are the native people, the villagers or townspeople. In that we feel, I consider myself, by the way, a random sample of Klawak. We feel that they're doing things that we're not aware of, and somehow they're always doing it wrong. I don't like that of the ANSCA Act. Most of the people that I ever have spoken to, and I make it a point to do that because I'm concerned about the welfare of my people, is most of the people that I've talked to have said that what's the ANSCA Act? And when I delve further, they're not interested in it. They're not, well, look at how many people are here. They're most, you know, they're eating dinner right about now, and I should be home. And they're watching their kids. They're fishing. They're working on seaweed. They're doing other things. They say what will be, and the fight goes on, and blah blah blah. The basic concern they have is dividends. It irritates me. And let me see. I understand that 1991 is an issue, and being as I know very little about the ANSCA Act, and I'm guilty of that, I'm afraid. I know that 1991 is an issue, but I'm uneasy that it could only be it might only be the tip of an iceberg. 1991 may not be the whole issue. It may just be a part of something that's much bigger, that's falling on the heads of our people. And I'm really not wanting that to happen. I don't trust lawyers. They seem to play a big role in the ANSCA business, down to local corporations. I don't trust them, and here they're the ones that drew up the ANSCA Act. And in my inmost being, I am suspicious that maybe they hid someplace a fail clause so that their people can eventually take those lands that was provided for us in the ANSCA Act away from our people. And I didn't just come by this idly. I just didn't say, oh, you know, they're out to get us. I mean, I have history to look at. And so I'm suspicious of them. I don't believe that there's been enough push on the education of the ANSCA Act itself. As far as the corporations go, the corporations, to me, and I'm not I'm not a board member of any corporation or anything, seem to be so busy learning how to manage all these big funds and be corporate and be profit making that they hardly have time to breathe, and therefore hardly have time to educate the people about what this thing is. It's more than a corporation. The ANSCA Act is more than a corporation. It's more than a dividend, and it's more than 1280 acres per municipality. It's something our people fought for. It's something our people were spit in their face, may as well say, our old-timers, and yet they hung in there, and they won. And I like that about our people. Another thing is that the corporations that we have, whether it be a regional or a local corporations, I give them their credit. They're doing all right considering the time that they have had to be involved in big time spending. When you consider that those people who are sitting on the boards, like if they were in the city, they had mediocre jobs, if they were highly educated, like sheepskin diplomas, they were given decent jobs like in the city. But basically, in the local level, we had subsistence people. They were subsistence users. And then all of a sudden, you get these big bucks, and they have to deal with that. Xerox didn't progress overnight. They didn't come to where they are. IBM didn't develop overnight like our own Indian corporations are doing. I really give them credit for that. When the corporations were formed and we had these millions of dollars from the local level to the regional levels, the people that never paid attention to us before except to laugh at us and make fun of us were all of a sudden being our buddies, such as the bankers and the lawyers. And our people kind of had a cultural shock to deal with. So I think our local people are coming along okay. I'm a little anxious for them. I want them to make it, because when 13th Regional went boopers, it wasn't just 13th Regional, it was all the Alaska Natives. Because people look at that and they're glad in their hearts, and you know that. Your parents told you and their parents told them how it goes. On this 1991 issue, I believe in our people. I believe with all my heart in our people. There have been wars, there have been diseases. We've withstood ridicule. We've been mocked, but we still survived. I believe that the Alaska Native Brotherhood is going to play an instrumental part on the salvaging or the holding together of the this ASCA business and also of the IRA. And I believe that they have been our champions before. They know just how to do it when it comes time. If the push come to shove, I really believe in the Alaska Native Brotherhood. And I believe in them because they get their wisdom from God through Jesus. And that's all I have to say. I have to go home and cook. Thank you.
Well, I think we all probably have to go home and get something to eat. But if there's somebody who can't come tonight or tomorrow afternoon and would like to say something now before we adjourn, well, there being no one, I just want to thank you for coming this afternoon and to say we'll reconvene at 7 o'clock tonight, and we'll carry on this evening for a few hours and then tomorrow afternoon again. So we'll see you later. Well, I'll just call our meeting to order. My name is Tom Berger, and this is the Alaska Native Review Commission. We began the meeting here this afternoon and had what I'm told was quite a good turnout, and we said we'd carry on this evening, and we'll carry on again tomorrow at 1 o'clock. But everything that's said is recorded and transcribed and will form part of the permanent record of the proceedings of the commission, and the report that I will be writing will be based on what is said at these meetings all over Alaska, and I will be sending a copy of the report to everybody who has testified at these hearings. I think you all know pretty well what why we're here, and so I don't see any point in waiting any longer to begin this evening's testimony, and we'll start with you, Mr. Thomas. Could you just give us your first name for
sure. My name is Elwood Thomas. That's spelled ELWOOD Thomas. Thank you, Mr. Berger, for giving me an opportunity to speak here tonight. When we first heard that the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act was going to go in our favor, even before we heard the news, there were people talking about paying off their mortgages. improvements on boats and homes. For example, some said they'd get a new engine, new radios for their boats, new roofs, perhaps new foundations for their homes. Some were going to save for higher education for their children. Some are going to save for when they're no longer are able to earn a living. Some even talked about vacations. Don't have too much to say to go into detail on these things, but these are some of the things that some of our people were expecting from the Native Claims Settlement Act. We visualized nothing but things that were beyond our reach in purchasing power. I don't consider Sea Alaska's officers adequate to operate successfully our Sea Alaska Corporation. I believe, I don't know what can be done about this, but I thought I'd mention it anyway. If I survive 1991, I believe that I will be seriously consider selling my shares while there's still some value to these shares. I don't like to talk like this. There's a lot of effort being made by people from further on up north in our own Sea Alaska and even our local corporations to urge people to hold on to their shares. But while there's still some value to it, I'm 63 years of age now, and I see nothing on the horizon as far as benefits are concerned, other than perhaps token distributions that are made usually just before Christmas. Other than this, Mr. Berger, I don't have too much more to say. I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have or whatever.
Well, I gather you were active in the land claims movement before ANCSA, is that so?
Yes.
Could you tell me a little bit about that and what you were trying to achieve?
In the late 40s, early 50s and 60s, we used to designate one day out of our Alaska Native Brotherhood and Alaska Native Sisterhood conventions to discuss our land claims. And even in those, back in those early days, people were already anticipating nothing but good out of these land settlements. We worked hard at it. I don't think I should go into detail as to how we worked at it, but we did what our attorneys requested and required of us to do.
Well, when you were working for land claims, what was it you envisaged the settlement would mean? We know what the settlement turned out to be, that is, corporations were established and the $962.5 million and the 44 million acres were transferred to the corporations. But before ANCSA, when you were working on this, what was it that you foresaw would be the kind of land claim settlement that would work?
Actually, I didn't visualize or dream about anything specific except to better our own living, improvements on our homes and so on. We even anticipated that perhaps the corporations, well, we didn't think of corporations those days, we thought perhaps that the locals would even guarantee bank loans so that we can rapidly proceed to better ourselves.
The local corporations?
We didn't think of corporations in those early days. We thought about the locals like Klawak, you know, the village of Klawak, if they were in charge of it. We don't know whether the city of Klawak or would they designate someone else to take care of it. In those early days, we had to put up with the Secretary of the Interior or his designated person. We would be at his mercy.
What about the general economic and social status or the condition of Alaska Natives from 1971 until today? Has it improved? Has it, if it has, was that owing to ANCSA, or have there been any other changes you'd like to comment on?
Not really. Back in 71, people, there were lots of successful fishermen, for example, that got their boats and paid for them. Now some of these boats are being recalled, you might call it, or the mortgages are being foreclosed on them. Actually, I see no improvements whatsoever due to ANCSA, none whatsoever.
Well, let me raise another subject, if you care to comment. One of the fears that people have as I go around the state is that if once 1991 arrives and shares can go on the market, that outsiders will try to buy up shares in the corporations and take them over, and then they'll own the corporations and they'll own the land. Now, some communities that depend on subsistence are really worried about that because they feel their land is essential to carrying on hunting and fishing and trapping in some parts of the state. You indicated that you would seriously consider selling your shares. Does the possibility of enough people selling their shares to enable outsiders to take over the native corporations trouble you? Do you want to make any observations on that?
Yeah, absolutely, sure. Right up to the present time, we're still subject to regulations made by the state of Alaska, whether or not these lands belong to us. For example, we go up here to the river and get a humpy for the we older people, cherish so much what we call boiled fish. You know, I've seen people there arrested and were given tickets. Or this is our land, we were here first. I can't go out and shoot a deer like I used to. And in order to jig a red snapper that we've done for over the years, like I say, I'm 63 years of age now, you have to have permits, licenses, the whole bit. I don't see where Sea Alaska or any of the corporations have made any efforts to protect our rights. They claim they're doing it, but as far as I can see, they're making very feeble swings at it. Let me elaborate a little bit more on the lands that we claim. The Forest Service made rounds here in the neighborhood and burnt down cabins that we used to own at Carheen, for example.
When was that?
I don't know. If I had known this subject would come up at any time, I would have tried to remember. They burnt down cabins that belonged to Native and non-Native.
Anything else you'd like to mention?
Yes. Mr. Berger, I'd like to make a comment on our elections of board of directors at the Sea Alaska level and at the local level. There's some doubt that one candidate who served on Kowakinya and knew he got enough votes to get back on, but he did not. We might try to do something about this. And at the Sea Alaska level, when a person casts his or her ballot, for example, at the Sea Alaska level, I now hold 200 shares in Sea Alaska. I inherited my Uncle Frank G. Johnson's shares. He willed them to me. Therefore, I hold 200 shares. When I cast my votes, I don't know whether or not my votes got counted. And if they were not counted, I am not notified as to why my votes were disqualified. So that if I was notified and I thought that I was right, I have no one to appeal to. You see? Very un-American as far as I'm concerned. Are there any further questions?
No, not at this time. I might think of some more, but I don't know.
Okay. And again, Mr. Berger, I would like to thank you for giving me this opportunity. I do appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Just happened to have a prepared statement. If you don't mind, I'd like to read from it first here.
Please do.
Okay, good evening, Justice Berger. I'd like to welcome you and your wife and support staff to Klawock for these commission hearings. I trust your stay will be enjoyable. My name is John Scan. I am a shareholder of 100 shares in Sea Alaska, the regional corporation for Southeast Alaska. I am also a shareholder of Klawock Hinya Corporation, the local village corporation of which I also serve as a board of director. However, the views and opinions I express tonight are my own personal views and not that of either the regional or village corporation. These words are my thoughts as of today, May 24th, 1984, and not of the near or distant future when matters may change drastically, whether for the good or bad of each respective corporation. If I may, sir, speak briefly on the regional corporation, Sea Alaska. Number one, I believe that Sea Alaska Board of Directors, considering the enormous pressure that is charged to them under Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, is doing a very good job in management of the corporation in general. When an 18-member board of directors has to meet everyday complaints and a handful of publicity-seeking shareholders' words of abuse via radio, TV, and news media, I publicly commend them for a job well done under unique situations. However, I believe that a lot more emphasis needs to be directed toward shareholder involvement with the corporation. Native people by historical tradition are fish-oriented. I personally see not enough help being directed to shareholders of Sea Alaska in relation to the fisheries subsidiary Ocean Beauty. Perhaps at this time I should define the two types of shareholders that I see today, no specific person or areas. Number one, I see the shareholder who wants nothing but his or her corporation to take care of them. I also see the shareholder who wants nothing but a fair chance in life to move ahead financially for his or herself and family. This is why I say that Sea Alaska Corporation needs to concentrate more in helping those shareholders who want that fair chance, whether to purchase a new fishing vessel or to be advanced in their jobs with their corporation or its subsidiaries. I have seen too much where shareholders who meet certain criteria are passed up for a non-shareholder, both locally and regionally. In closing my comments on Sea Alaska Corporation, I wish them, staff, and the board of directors well in the future. Now for the local village corporation, as I see its goods and its bads. Klawock Hinya Corporation is one of the very few corporations who have the unfortunate enrollment of shareholders which the majority does not reside in Klawock, but in Ketchikan, Seattle, and elsewhere. Klawock has been put in a position of what I consider a no-win situation, such as it's been proven in the first 10 years of corporate stature. I have seen the results of the so-called money and power of the village corporations divide this community mercifully, destroy lifelong friendships, and put relative against relative for the fight over control of Klawock Hinya Corporation and the only losers were the corporation itself and the innocent bystander shareholders. The majority of the board of directors of Kalakenia do not, I repeat, do not live in this community. Thus, when local directors propose certain business ventures that would benefit the community socially, strong opposition and ultimate defeat of such proposals is imminent. One of the biggest problems I see happening to us is Indian jealousy among ourselves. Under the Land Claims Settlement Act, as you are well aware, each village such as ours received 23,080 acres of land, X dollars cash. And in Tlaloc's situation, I see zero business experience in the corporate business world. Shareholders were literally taken off the street, if I may use the phrase. Given a briefcase, checkbook, nice suit and tie, and told to go make money for your people, you are now a board of director. Very few of our shareholders are college educated. Those few who have seen no desire to live in Tlaloc but wish to sit on the board of directors, both past and present, and tell us in the village how and when to live. I think that is wrong. Some people have tried to help our corporation, both shareholder and non-shareholder, but these people fell victim to the internal and external differences of ideas of the corporation owners. I firmly believe that Kalakenia can go forth profitably in the future if this division among ourselves is eliminated and that we all work for the success of the corporation now before it is too late politically and financially. Perhaps the United States Congress should never have created corporations. Maybe they should have just divided up land and monies equally among Alaska Natives by region. Of course, that's all water under the bridge. Which brings me to the 1991 topic, when stockholders may sell their stock on the open market. I speak for myself, Your Honor, when I believe that the 1991 issue is one of the biggest frauds ever brought before the Native people for the following reasons. Number one, the timber lands owned by Kalakenia will probably be completely logged of its timber resources under the present logging plan of the corporation. What's left of value? We've lived without ownership of these lands in the past and will continue to survive without them in the future. Three, my stock in Kalakenia is of paper value only. Should some company, assuming that some value is left with the land at 1991, I probably would not hesitate to sell because the stock has done nothing for me to date. In conclusion, the Land Claims Settlement Act has benefited a chosen few shareholders of Kalakenia Corporation. This benefit is through salaries and per diem monies over the last 10 years with very little accomplished in the business world. Shareholders have received a yearly check from their corporation. This check is from partial liquidation of assets and not from profits of business ventures. One of the largest complaints is that for every dollar designated for the shareholders, certain staff and board directors receive 10 times that amount in per diem, thus defeating the ultimate purpose of the corporation, that purpose being the social and economic welfare of the village of Tlaloc. Attorneys, accountants, consultants have been the winners of certain Native corporations, costing us enormous amounts of money. Some advice has been good, some has been bad. Maybe during the course of your hearing statewide, you may come upon a suggestive solution to our local problem as I see it, and you would share the idea with us. But as for now, I believe our future as a corporation is very bleak. Every shareholder has the right to be treated equal no matter where they live. Native residents of Ketchikan should have had their own urban corporation, such as Sitka and Juneau has. Should such a decision happen, Ketchikan could be proportioned and prorated from 1973 to current in land monies, with Tlaloc given credit according for those who elect to re-enroll voluntarily. My comments tonight point no accusing finger at any specific individual, nor, as earlier stated, do I officially represent any organization here tonight. I thank you for the opportunity to appear before the Native Review Commission. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Scan. Just one question. You say that you suggest that one way to deal with the problem of non-resident shareholders is to establish an urban corporation for the native people of
Ketchikan.
The other two urban corporations did receive the right to select lands, as I understand it. Each received the right to select 23,040 acres. What would you do about giving a new urban corporation established in Ketchikan the right to select lands? It's an interesting idea that you've raised, and your proposal is interesting. I'm just wondering about where would they go to get any land, or would they have to do without land and just get money?
No, Mr. Justice, I believe that the shareholders in Ketchikan, native people in Ketchikan, should have had their own urban corporation. Why they didn't, I do not understand to this date. They said that they were, over 50% non-native in the community. That's what I consider a pretty cheap excuse. Sitka is overwhelmingly non-native. They've got land. Juneau's Gold Belt is overwhelmingly non-native. They got land. I don't know why Ketchikan didn't, when they should have. And I think that should such an effort be put through for Ketchikan to have its own urban corporation, that they would have the right to select any place in Southeast Alaska, such as Juneau and Sitka did, the 23,000 acres equal. And that those residents who of Ketchikan who are enrolled in Tlaloc Hinya Corporation have the right given to them voluntarily to re-enroll in this ex-urban corporation should it ever be formed. And that when I mentioned prorated and that monies that they've received from Tlaloc Hinya Corporation, there's just a formula in my head here, that monies they receive from Tlaloc Hinya Corporation, when they select their new lands and timber value, that Tlaloc Hinya be accorded a direct cash benefit equal to the amount that they have received from Tlaloc Hinya. And as I said earlier in the presentation, we've been put in a unique situation where I believe the percentage of Tlaloc Hinya shareholders who live in Tlaloc is about around 40% reside here now, out of 100%, and it puts us in a no-win situation, as I stated earlier.
You agree pretty much with Mr. Thomas about selling your shares in 1991. You say that if they will fetch something on the market, there's no reason why shareholders shouldn't sell their shares. You say the land will have been logged off, so the new owners won't be getting very much. I think that's basically what you said.
Yes, Mr. Justice. As I said in my presentation here, I consider the 1991 issue one of the biggest frauds ever pulled on Native people. What is going to be left of under our present logging plan at Tlaloc Hinya, I believe it's about 7 years left of actual logging in 1991 is, 8 years away?
No.
what's going to be left out there. We don't own the land. See, Alaska, the regional corporation, owns all the so-called subsurface rights, if it ever gets defined.
And what's the, when would you be able to take off a new crop of timber on that land? How many years down the road?
I'm no forester, but I understand it takes about 90 years to grow back and be loggable. See, my point is that we've lived without these lands before. You know, we can live without it again. But, you know, I failed to find the big issue on native land control. I failed to see a valid issue. Mm-hmm. And that's why I consider it, you know, one of the biggest frauds that's ever pulled on the native people in Alaska.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, anyone else should feel free to come forward and make a presentation. Yes, ma'am.
My name is Pauline Pradovich. I'm a housewife here, and I think I've been one of the very few housewives that went to all the meetings when Sea Alaska was being formed. I sat there when there was my husband and all these young men. Not one of them had any gray hair. Everyone had a head full of black hair or brown hair. And when they said that, when you folks go out, you folks are going to be the youngest directors in any corporations that I've ever seen. And everybody laughed, but nobody realized that at the time that man said it, that they didn't even understand law. The man that was standing in front of them said, "You're going to have to learn corporate law." And he gave a description of all the corporate laws that he felt was right, you know, they'd have to know. And they kept pulling these lawyers back, calling everybody back to Juneau. And I thought, goodness sake, this sounds like something that with everybody pulling together in all the native villages, we would come up with something that would, you know, help our communities. We would walk through our communities probably 10, 15 years from now and see better fishing villages, nicer roads. And there hasn't been anything done in southeastern Alaska. When they started South Sea Alaska, there was 13 villages, and there was one person from every village sat on that board. And today you cannot, or I cannot, point to one of them that represents Klowoc or Craig. And we have very little voice, and I don't think there is very many people within this village that would realize that the piece of paper that corporation sends out, that they could, you know, put their vote on, say this is going to be for whoever you want. It's gotten to the point where there is no representation from every village, like it started out to be. Why it was never put into to the guidelines and say, well, there will have to be one person from every village so that every village would have one representative sitting on Sea Alaska's board. Right now you go up there and you see them from Juneau, Angoon, Hoona, and every time there's money going that they claim they have to dish out to each and every native village, it doesn't come to southeastern Alaska. Not at least to Prince of Wales and around here. It goes out to Hoona, and it's just very little of that money trickles in here. Like we thought, oh boy, fishing. And the logging would be nice. And when they had loggers out here on our roads on Prince of Wales Island, they had pencil hire. Pencil hire is when you would say, come on, sign your name, you can go to work next week. 3 weeks later, they'll say, hey, you're laid off. That's it. We'll call you when we have another job. But you know, there has been people, men that had been laid off, and a couple times they had forgotten their personal things. They'd go back and somebody from down south was laying in the bunk. There was already somebody taking their place. And here the guys that are up in Sea Alaska drawing their money, they draw big wages, plus their per diem, plus all their costs. They could not take the time to come and look at our logging. Right now you can go down the roads of Prince of Wales Island and see these little trees dying because there's some kind of little bugs eating it. You can, if you drive toward Craig, you can see little trees all dying. A lot of people are unconcerned about it, but it isn't. It's going to be like 30 years from now, you're not going to see that type of a tree on Prince of Wales Island. I brought it up to the corporation. They must think I'm either crazy or they're blind, because you can see it right along the road. Little trees dying. And that is just the first growth. There won't be no second growth. You won't see it 50 years from now. And I thought, well, geez, I was just hip. Oh boy, I was young. That was in 72, 73. We were going up there constantly to learn corporate law. In fact, when I ended up on the Health Corporation, we were setting guidelines for our corporation. That was after I had gone through that, and then we got our Health Corporation going. And I thought, boy, this is when we could really improve our villages. We have one from every village. There's going to be a voice in Sea Alaska from every village. But it didn't work out that way because we did not know corporate law. And just as soon as we thought we learned something, somebody else would pull another string, and we'd find ourselves down to on our knees again, so to speak. So I feel that Sea Alaska should have at least the way it started out, or the way my dreams were, that we would all have a voice in it. But these voices are from urban areas, and the 13 villages, I don't think there's over 6 representatives from these little villages. And John's talking about Ketchikan. I wonder what we'd have had if Ketchikan was in on, had their own. So I feel that Sea Alaska has let us down drastically, because they have, they talk about their fisheries. They have one cannery in Ketchikan, but it does not help our fishermen hardly. So, and as for selling my stocks, I feel that I have, this is my land, so to speak. It's my grandchildren that's running around. And I think that we would be foolish to sell the land that belonged to our grandchildren and their children, because our forefathers fought a good fight for what little land that was given us. Because sure, when they started, they figured on having the same dreams we did. Every house would have something nice. Everybody would have a flush toilet in it. In those days, they didn't have running water in their houses. They had no electricity, but they started a good fight. And now that the few people that are complaining about what little money we get from our corporation, but they've forgotten that we didn't own land. In our villages, it was not our land. And so I feel that we have had a step forward, but 10 steps back once we got our corporation, because we've lost much more than we ever gained. Fishing, hunting, we've lost. Where before, if you were blind, you got to your neighbor go out and get your fisher. Now that they say the fishing game says you can't pick fish eggs for somebody else, whether they can make it out or not. You get fined for overpicking your quota. But before, our native people used to share everything they had. Now it's gotten to the point you can't even share the truth, especially amongst our corporation. Somebody's scared that they'd be stepping on somebody else's toes. So it's really pulled us apart too. So I could say we just made one step forward. We can own our land. But we didn't before. The BIA and everybody is telling us which way to move, where to send our kids. If it wasn't them, it was the church is telling us what to do. So I really can't say that we had gained, but then they did give different families the right to own the land their houses were on. I think that's the only land we may see. I've asked for land through the corporation. They said, we're looking into it. Where Craig gave away land, but now they can't even get to their land because I don't know, some legalities have kept the road close to their land that was given to them around the lake up here. So I feel that Sealaska should have at least made sure that we had an income here for the people that are willing to go out and fish, are willing to go out and get timber, or even to go up and get fish from the creeks, but they haven't done a thing about that. And then they're talking about, since we're such rich Indians, that we would lose our rights to our Alaska Native health services. And so, being a person that had worked with a search, I feel that was 10 steps backwards in that program too, because you don't really get the services that you would have gotten 5-6 years ago. If you don't have the money to fly into town, then you just sit home and try to get well on your own. There's a lot of things I feel that I could talk about, but I got so excited, but I'm nervous that I feel that for people to walk around and say, I'll sell this, I'll sell that, which their own people had, people that have died, but fought a good fight to give it to them. It wasn't just for that man over there or that lady over there to claim their shares. It was for their great, great, great grandchildren to claim that land. So, anything I.
No, well, that's. You've spoken very well. I do appreciate your. Speaking, anything you'd like to add, please feel free to do that.
Well, there's lots, but I feel that there's, like I said, we took one step forward and 10 back because we have lost a lot of rights. That was taken away just because we had that land claims.
Thank you, Mrs. Predovich.